and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Gary Null, we got a great day ahead of us. We got a lot of information to share. I'm not in studio today. I'm on the road filming, and so I apologize for any lack of the kind of clarity and audio perfection that you normally hear when we're broadcasting with my portable studio. However, so much information. We're going to talk about why we should not be using some of these Alzheimer's drugs, instead making lifestyle modification, why that antibacterial soap really isn't antibacterial. An apple a day keeps what? Well, I'll tell you, it really keeps you healthy, but there's a reason why. Also today, we're going to explore, from our health and nutrition segment, krill oil, K-R-I-L-L. It's a fish oil. Really good stuff that it does, and I'll tell you about that. And we have a lot more. Ear acupuncture, which can help you lose weight. Then from our public health issues, we're going to look at why you may never want to eat shrimp again from alternate Jill Richardson. Really bad what they're doing with the shrimp. Also, are the UNICEF live polio vaccines the actual cause of polio among Syrians? Well, they've given 1.7 billion polio vaccines that have been purchased. Bad idea. The Washington Post and Amazon are doing business with the CIA. We should know about that. Also today, dogs and cows and toxic vials. That's what vaccines are made of. Did you ever ask what's in a vaccine? We'll tell you. And do you believe that vaccines are better nutrition, or better nutrition prevents disease? Michelle Goldstein will share that with you. So we have a lot of information to share on environmental issues, public health, longevity. Let's begin. No guest today, however. We are facing a mega, mega epidemic of brain-related injuries. I know this because my newest book and my newest public television special, which is on around the United States right now, was just launched about 2 weeks ago, is addressing it. And I'm getting flooded with responses. People now in their 40s are talking about memory loss, in their 50s, dementia, in their 60s, Alzheimer's, and people that never thought they'd be taking care of their parents are now having to do full-time work in order just to maintain some person's association with the one that's suffering inside the family. So there's a lot of problems. This is just the beginning of it. On a scale of 1 to 100, the 5 million people that we're seeing right now, it's not even 10%. I predict that in the next 10 years, 15 at the most, you'll have 50 million Americans incapacitated completely with dementia and Alzheimer's. But it's more than that. Because of the caregivers who had to take care of these people, the burden upon society. Let me just give you one example. There is a very conscientious person who lives up in Poughkeepsie and went to school, learned about nutrition and health, was a nutritionist at different places, and a dietitian in a hospital, and was doing very well with this person's career and helping people. Mother came down with dementia. Of all the siblings, and it's a large family, this person was the one who had to take care of their mother. As a result, it's a day broken in half. Half the day taking care of her job, the other half taking care of her mother. As a result, by the time she crashes asleep about 1 o'clock in the morning, having to get up again at 5 o'clock, she's exhausted. She's only 44 years of age, but feels like she's 65. She no longer is in the shape she once was. She tries to do the best she can, given the schedule that she has. There's also animosity. What do you do when other people in your family won't share the burden, It's all on you, and yet these are your brothers and sisters. And so that's what you can face. It really adversely affects you and your own health. Cortisol levels go off the chart, which are your stress hormones. So I'm suggesting that we start paying attention now to what we can do to protect our brain, our neurons, to get rid of the plaque, the amyloid plaque, that builds up in the brain, no different than the other plaque that builds up in our arteries, to rejuvenate brain tissue, to protect the oxidative stress from happening with antioxidants. We have the protocols. This is not hypothetical. I've been presenting scientific studies. In fact, right now as we speak, I'm being reviewed by a peer review publication to see about having an article published based upon a clinical study I did, and then to make a presentation before about 5,000 scientists on this work of reversing brain aging. So this is not something that's maybe in the future. It's now. But then most people don't look at that. They are the exception. Most people just have their doctor give them a drug. Here's the latest on this from Stem Cell Reports, it's a peer review journal. Quote, animal tests are not well suited for evaluating potential treatments for Alzheimer's disease, according to a study published in Stem Cell Reports. The problem seems to be that mouse brain cells are much more responsive to the effects of drugs compared with human brain cells, leading to an overestimation of the drug value and disappointment when drugs are tested in patients. Much of the research dedicated to developing drugs for Alzheimer's disease has focused drugs that block the production of the amyloid proteins that form plaques in the brain. Despite promising results in animal models of Alzheimer's disease, the medications that have made it to clinical trials have so far failed. Let me repeat that. Have so far failed. That's right. Models of Alzheimer's disease. And so here's the takeaway message. For those of you who are waiting for some magic drug that some doctor will say had some promising results in an animal model, which means mice, this study shows that the mice brain responds differently to those drugs than a human brain. The human brain does not respond in the same favorable way. Therefore, the drug's not going to do you any good, much like almost all of chemotherapy for most cancers. So, what's our option? What's the good news on this? Well, we know, for example, that we can use chelation therapy to get rid of the heavy metals. That's a very important part of helping anyone with memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, and multiple sclerosis. Get rid of all the heavy metals you can, both orally by green juices and vitamin C, and intravenous, and with suppository, with EDTA, ethylene, diamine, tetracetic acid. It chelates, binds to, grabs onto heavy metals, takes them out. Then, with nutrients like PPQ, coenzyme Q10, NADH, glycerol phosphorylcholine, phosphatidylserine, acetyl-L-carnitine, carnosine, benfetamine, resveratrol, these actually rejuvenate, protect, and make the cells much more capable of living a longer life. And then, of course, getting rid of the fat in the diet. So we have good news to empower people when the medical people are now saying the treatment we've been using hasn't worked. I just wish you had a chance to hear the people that we've been working with. Amazing results. Amazing. So that's the latest there. Next up, I'm sure you've heard that the antibacterial soap has come under FDA scrutiny. Well, I don't believe in the antibacterial soap. What you need instead of the antibacterial soap is you need regular old soap and scrubbing. It is the scrubbing that makes the difference. It's just like I always have when I enter my apartment or home. I have a bottle of alcohol, and the alcohol has a little sprayer on it, you know, like you spray, you know, vegetables or you spray anything. Now, what happens is you take a paper towel and you spray your doorknobs. You can spray any surface area, the handles to a refrigerator, the surfaces of a sink, but it's the wiping, it's that friction of the rub that actually breaks the bacterial, viral, parasitic shell and shield and causes them to die. Now, when you wash your hands and you make sure that it's nice and sudsy and you take a little scrub brush and you brush your fingernails, most people never clean under the fingernails. What? You mean there's dirt under my fingernails? Yeah, friend, you could grow a vegetable garden with fun under your fingernails. I think what's under your toenails. And then scrub. It is the friction of cleaning between. Now, watch a surgeon clean. They clean their hands the right way, or a nurse in an operating theater. That's the right way. That's not, you know, show. That's not some drama. That's real. So forget the antibacterial soap. Just regular, good old soap and scrub. That'll make the difference. This is according to a review by the FDA. Quote, soaps and body washes that are labeled antibacterial have now come under fire by the Food and Drug Administration as the government agency has submitted a proposed rule that will require manufacturers of such products to prove they are safe for long-term use. Now, why? Quote, antibacterial soaps and body washes are used widely and frequently by consumers in everyday home, work, school, and public settings where the risk of infection is relatively low, says Dr. Janet Woodcock, director of the FDA Center for Drug Evaluation Research. Quote, due to consumers' extensive exposure to the ingredients in antibacterial soaps, we believe there should be a clearly demonstrated benefit from using antibacterial soap to balance any potential risk. Now, why? Why all this interest now? Well, we said this 10 years ago on our broadcast, and that's because of what is called triclosan and triclocarbon. These have been analyzed. Now, according to the Journal of Environmental Science and Technology, triclosan fuels the development of resistant bacteria. That's not good. And that research was done by the National Institutes of Health. Quote, suggested that triclocarban may harm nursing babies, while another proposed that hand sanitizers may in fact cause norovirus outbreaks. Still, other research has lauded the positive effects of antibacterial soaps. But you want to get rid of MRSA in hospitals? Autoclave using ozone. Give every patient, unless there's a specific medical reason not to, ozone. If we gave every patient coming out of surgery, providing that their blood clotting was not impacted, ozone, as in Germany, Russia, and Italy, we would reduce our post-operation infection death rate by 95%. Now, you may not think it's a big deal until you realize that 100,000 people died in one recent year of infections they got from being in a hospital. If we were to treat any form of topical, they generally happen on the arms, of MRSA with ozone. Also, you could do a poultice of Manuka honey with colloidal silver, and that would also kill it. But we're not. But at least you know this information, and that's important. And if for the people who don't think this is that relevant, let me explain about relevance. There was a fellow who used to attend the health support groups in New York, and a nice guy from Connecticut named Mike. And I remember coming out of a lecture that we were filming, and they're on the street corner, gobbling down hot dogs. I mean, really gobbling them down, wolfing them down. Because if you notice, a wolf doesn't chew, it just gulps it. Was Mike. I thought, that's interesting. Here he is coming to a health support group and then wolfing it down. But Mike, even though he did that, when he had his stroke, the last thing he said before he lost consciousness, he said, put me into a hyperbaric oxygen chamber or don't treat me at all. Well, they put him in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber and it saved his life. And he was able to recover, fully recover. And then he no longer did the hot dogs. And he told me about that. And he wrote me a very nice letter saying that, you know, that yes, he was one of those people in the audience that listened every day, attended workshops, you know, got books, but he didn't apply all of it. But he's glad he knew what to do when he had a stroke. Now, if every person had high levels of magnesium, 1,000 milligrams of magnesium from citrate, and they took that at night before they went to bed, what do you want to bet you would see a 20 to 30% drop off of strokes and heart attacks during the night when a lot of people have heart attack and strokes? If you gave people garlic capsules, vitamin C, magnesium at a high dose, let's say 700-800 milligrams, and calcium to go with it, a vitamin E at 800 units mixed tocopherols, meaning the gamma, beta, delta, alpha, and coenzyme Q10, 400 units, you would drop off heart attack and stroke rates by 70%. So even if you don't apply everything now, having the knowledge makes a difference. For example, I have an awful lot of school teachers who are listening right now, all over the world. I get emails from them, from all these countries. A teacher's a teacher. You know, the traditions, what they're teaching may change, but the fact that they're teaching. And they have students. And students bring infections into class and don't have hygiene. A simple process of walking around the room, holding a can of citrus spray in the air, and squirting it about every 2 feet in between classes means that the air itself will be decontaminated of all the viruses that were coughed and bacteria spewed into the air, which could otherwise hang around for about 4 or 5 hours and land on all that surface. And then just to take that same citrus and spray it on a desk and wipe it down, first, you have a wonderful orange or lemon or lime smell in the room. Secondly, you just sanitize stuff. You've cleaned it up. Simple stuff. You know, or do the same thing on the tops with alcohol. Alcohol and wipe it off. How simple is that? Inexpensive, easy to do. From the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom, an apple a day keeps vascular death at bay, according to this new study. I'm going to quote directly from the University of Oxford. This is Oxford, the famous Oxford. Quote, we all know the saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. And this may prove true after new research suggests that eating an apple once a day may be just as beneficial as daily statin drugs when used when it comes to preventing vascular deaths in individuals over the age of 50. The study is being published in the British Medical Journal. Wow. So here they are, Meiji University, published in one of the most important medical journals in the world, saying an apple a day could do as good as statin drugs. Well, I'm not a proponent of statins. I think they're way oversold. Quote, this is earlier this year. Medical News Today reported on a study suggesting the benefits of statin use outweigh the risks slightly. Yeah. But they never matched it against apples, did they? Researchers show, quote, eating an apple a day could reduce the annual number of vascular deaths in the United Kingdom by 8,500, while daily statin use could reduce the number of deaths by 9,400. Yeah, but statins have a lot of side effects. Not good. So I'd rather see people reduce their risk of heart attack by having an apple a day, because the person likely to have the apple a day is also more likely to take vitamin C each day. That reduces your risk of heart attack. Vitamin E, that reduces your risk of heart attack. Having some garlic, that reduces your risk of a heart attack. You see, we have it all on the preventative and natural side. I'm Gary Knoll. We're 20 minutes into our program. I'm sorry I'm not in a studio where you'd have a better technical quality to the program, but hopefully everyone can hear me. I'm on a telephone. Now to our public health segment. This is from Jill Richardson from Alternet. The title of the article, which is posted on our website, along with about 80 other articles every 24 hours. All these articles are selected based upon empowering you, giving you insights that you wouldn't get in the mainstream or alternative media. So please get up on that. Why you may never want to eat shrimp again. I'll quote this. Shrimp cocktail makes a great finger food for holiday parties, right? Well, no, only if you have no idea how those crustaceans were produced. Because if you did, you wouldn't eat shrimp ever again. And even in the best case, you know which country it's from and whether it's farmed or wild, but odds are you won't know how it was farmed or how it was caught, so you're basically no wiser than you were before you got those little tidbits of information that sometimes they tell you at the store, oh, this is farm-raised or oh, this is wild-raised. My rule of thumb is that retailers and restaurants will always tell you when food is extra good because they'll want to charge you for it. Why offer up organic fruit, fruit or wild salmon or heritage turkey unless you can make an extra buck? When food isn't labeled, it's probably the cheapest stuff out there. So back to the mystery. Coconut shrimp on that tray at the party this weekend. What's in it? Where did it come from? Here's where it gets interesting. By the numbers, shrimp is America's number one seafood by a long shot. 85% of the shrimp eaten is imported, farmed, most of it. And when it arrives in the United States, almost none of this food is ever inspected. When it is inspected, some of the top reasons it's rejected are filth, salmonella, residues of banned veterinary drugs. Overseas, shrimp is often farmed in ponds that are treated with a long list of chemicals, urea, a superphosphate, diesel fuel, fish-killing chemicals like chlorine and rotenone, pesticides, antibiotics, including some that are banned in the United States, sodium tripolyphosphate, which is a neurotoxin, borax, and caustic soda. Yep, that's in the water with them. The ponds are made near the ocean, relying upon the tide to refresh the water and carry shrimp excrement out to the sea. The area around the ponds turns into dead zones. A recently published paper on life in a shrimp farming area in Bangladesh describes how shrimp farming wrecks the land and the economy, making life practically unlivable for the local people. A more responsible way to farm shrimp is in closed island ponds, and they're responsibly caught wild shrimp too, like the pink shrimp caught in Oregon or swat prawns caught in the Canadian Pacific. Thankfully, wild-caught shrimp aren't treated with a long list of unspeakably gross chemicals like farm shrimp can be. But far too often, wild shrimp are caught with methods that result in a lot of bycatch. The other species are marine life accidentally swept up and then tossed dead or dying over the side of the ship. For every pound of shrimp that you eat, 20 pounds of other species of fish died. When you pick up a cocktail shrimp off an hors d'oeuvre tray, of course, you aren't wishing for the needless death of the other sea creatures, nor are you wishing for the devastation of villages in faraway countries like Bangladesh. But that could be part of the story that brought the shrimp to the freezer section of your local store at such a great price. So, now you know something you didn't. Now from our public health segment, part two, from Christina England, we have this from realagenda.com. Dogs and cows and toxic vials. That's what vaccines are made of. I'll quote. On December 3rd, 2013, UK newspapers reported in the future, doctors will be given the power to lecture any parent who refuses to have their child vaccinated with the MMR vaccine. This move is a part of a government campaign to boost falling vaccination rates in UK. Critics argue that the move will intimidate parents, stating that parents want more choice. They feel that instead of bullying parents, making them feel as if Big Brother is watching them, the government should introduce the single vaccines as an alternative to the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, rubella. Well, okay. Why do you think so many parents in the UK and the United States are rebelling against the MMR vaccine? Well, could it be because mounting evidence suggests that the single measles, mumps, and rubella vaccinations are no safer than the three-in-one and are packed with gruesome ingredients? What ingredients, you say? There's no place in the United States or in England or anywhere else in the world where they show you what's in a vaccine. You just go in and you do the right thing. If your shoulder is, you know, your shoulder's bare, they're going to stick a needle in it and give you your shots. I've seen service people get as many as 10 to 12 shots at one time. Some children will do the same. There's no sign saying, here's what's in the list. To make sure that we get it right, we looked at a single rubella vaccine, the rubella live virus vaccine. Here it is. This is the list of the ingredients. Quote, RA27/3 strain, live attenuated rubella virus, fetal bovine serum, human serum, albumin, neomycin, hydrolyzed gelatin, rubella virus, sodium phosphate, sodium chloride. Now, fetal bovine serum, for those parents who are not sure, is a common component of animal cell culture media. It is harvested from calf fetuses taken from pregnant cows during slaughter. To use this in vaccines, the serum has to be harvested by means of cardiac puncture. The procedure takes place without any form of anesthesia. And that is cruel to the animal. Now, the human serum, albumin, is the most abundant protein in human plasma. It's produced by the liver. And so that's what you're getting. The cells, the virus pools, the fetal bovine serum and human albumin. Well, couldn't those be contaminated? Yes, they could be. But it gets worse. The reconstitution of vaccines, not healthy either. According to a fact sheet from the manufacturer, here are some of the side effects of this particular vaccine. Fever, syncope, headache, dizziness, malaise, irritability, vasculitis, diarrhea, vomiting, nausea, thrombocytopenia, purpura, regional lymphoempathemia, leukocystosis, arthritis, myalgia, encephalitis, polyneuritis, polyneuropathy, paralysis, sore throat, cough, rhinitis, Stevens-Johnson syndrome, arrhythmia multiforme, rash, burning, stinging at injection site, wheal and flare, redness, arrhythmia, pain, induration, nerve deafness, otitis media, optic neuritis, conjunctivitis, anaphylaxis. Well, all right. Death from various and, in some cases, unknown causes, quote, are reported rarely following vaccine with measles, mumps, rubella. Now, that's what the manufacturer tells you. Didn't know any of this. A single measles vaccine by itself without the combination of measles, mumps, and rubella. Here's the latest on that. Quote, the ingredients of the single measles vaccine manufactured by Sanofi are impressive as the ingredients of the rubella vaccine And here's what they include. Redness, local pain, swelling at the injection site, allergic reaction, anaphylactic shock, a rise in temperature, a temporary rash, arrhythmias, congestion, coughing, inflammation of the throat, eye infection, high fever, over 103 degrees, diarrhea, transient convulsions, syncope, purpura, vasculitis, optic neuritis, ataxia, a whole lot of serious conditions, including death. So, gee whiz, so instead of educating the public about how to eat healthier to prevent illnesses, doctors are now to lecture the parent to make them feel bad. And that brings up the final part of our public health segment today from Michelle Goldstein from VacTruth. Do you believe more vaccines or better nutrition prevent disease? I thought this was good. I'll share it with you. The National Institute of Health recently announced an expansion of its funding of 9 vaccine and treatment evaluation units with an annual budget of $135 million of government money. Each of the 9 research centers can compete with each other for the next 7 years for a portion of this funding. The effort is to decrease disease outbreaks by increasing the funding of vaccine studies. It's misguided. Financial medical resources could be better spent focusing on the underlying cause of illness. Functional medicine has established that most diseases are caused by nutritional deficiencies and toxic overloads, which together suppresses the immune system, making one susceptible to disease. The National Institute of Health established vaccine and treatment evaluation units in 1962 to conduct hundreds of vaccine clinical trials. But where's the proof that they actually have helped? While the idea that vaccinations can safely prevent disease is an attractive one, unfortunately, research and data do not support this theory. Ironically, the actual impact of vaccinations is to increase one's exposure to dangerous toxins and poisons, which weaken the immune system, making one more susceptible to disease. Renowned neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock has established that vaccinations decrease cellular immunity, which is critical for fighting disease. Vaccinations have been shown to increase the antibodies for a particular targeted disease for a limited length of time. Scientists mistakenly equate this increase in antibody creation to immunity from disease. Unfortunately, increased antibodies have never been proven to be effective in reducing disease likelihood. Vaccines can injure and kill you. Vaccinations, which promise immunity from disease, have been shown to injure and kill those receiving them. A 2013 research of the National Vaccination Information Center database shows that 52,835 negative reactions were reported to the for the DPT vaccine alone. An examination of the human papillomavirus vaccine for 2012 shows 119 deaths from the human papillomavirus, along with 894 cases of disability and 9,888 cases documented in emergency room visits. Regarding the hepatitis B vaccine, as of March 2012, there were 66,554 reports of serious adverse reactions to the vaccine, along with 1,500 deaths, including those officially reported as sudden infant death in babies. Edward Jenner was given credit by many as being the first to experiment with smallpox vaccinations. He first did this experiment with an 8-year-old boy named James Phipps on May 14, 1776. He then repeated the procedure on several other children. Convinced of his success, he persuaded George III that his vaccine would protect individuals from smallpox. The king awarded Jenner community money to be used to inoculate the public. The money awarded was comparable to $500,000 today. From that point onward, a group of zealots, paid vaccinators continued the practice up until the present time. It proved to be a very profitable industry. smallpox vaccination was actually shown to increase the likelihood of smallpox outbreaks. The smallpox hospital in London reported a steady alarming increase in smallpox incidents after the established practice of immunization. The incidence of smallpox began at 5% at the beginning of the century, rising to 44% in 1845, and then 64% in 1855, 78% in 1865, and 90% in 1875, and 96% in 1885. There were no more cases of smallpox or more deaths from smallpox after compulsory vaccination occurred from 1850 to 1869. The mean annual death rate from smallpox was for 10,000 individuals was at about 2.4, whereas compulsory vaccine, the death rate was 10.2, which meant that you had 500% more people dying who were vaccinated from smallpox than those who were not. In the 1800s, the smallpox vaccine caused many diseases, including syphilis, tuberculosis, and leprosy. In 1867, M. DePaul, the chief of the vaccination service of the French Academy of Medicine, published an essay on the dangers of syphilitic infection through vaccination, describing the infection of 160 children with it. Dr. A. Wilder, professor of pathology and former editor of the New York Medical Times, reported in 1901 that, quote, vaccination is the infusion of a contaminating element into the system, and after such contamination, you can never be sure of regaining the former purity of the body. Consumption or tuberculosis follows in the wave of vaccinations as certainly as effect follows cause, end quote. And by the way, Jenner's own son that he vaccinated died of tuberculosis. Now, despite, and so did the young boy, Phipps died of tuberculosis. So despite the statistics and evidence against smallpox vaccination and its success, which it didn't have, the pro-vaccinators continued to support their stance and continue to this day. The practice was so lucrative to give up. After a disastrous smallpox epidemic in 1872, a Royal Commission on Vaccination was appointed, and in 1889, to examine the situation. 7 years and 136 meetings later, in spite of significant evidence of smallpox vaccine failure, the committee concluded with a falsehood that smallpox vaccine prevents smallpox. But we know now from a careful examination of that, that that was just all political, no different than our meetings are today. A Dr. McLean, a well-known medical authority at the time, recommended that the pro-vaccinators disprove the numerous facts against vaccines, but also recognized that the practice of vaccines was too profitable to discontinue. He understood that profits and greed would trump the obvious failure of vaccinations. Nothing has changed in the world of vaccines except the situation has become worse through the exponential growth in the number of mandated vaccines in this country. The polio vaccine continued the smallpox vaccine myth. Individuals receiving the polio vaccine continued to develop polio. Statistics were manipulated, we've proven that on this program many times, by changing the definition of the disease after the creation of the vaccine. The polio diagnosis requirements were made more restrictive after the polio vaccine creation. Now, this change in diagnosis criteria had the effect of reducing the number of polio cases reported, but it didn't change how many people were getting paralyzed. That increased. They just didn't call them polio anymore. Vaccine graphs also show that polio outbreaks were reduced in many countries prior to the introduction of the vaccine, along with other illnesses, which vaccines took credit for eradicating. In reality, improvements in sanitation and public hygiene and nutrition were responsible for disease prevention and reduction. Unfortunately, there is no 100% safeguard against disease, and there are unfortunate deaths and suffering caused by illnesses. If vaccinations were safe and effective, they would be a welcome medical intervention, but neither claim holds true. One important way to prevent disease is to build up one's immune system, and that's what we talk about every day here, eating nutrient-rich foods instead of processed junk food is critical to health. Following the dietary principles of the Weston Price Foundation, except for the meat part, is one way. And then you have to avoid toxicity. Metal toxicity is another large contributor to a weakened immune system. Major sources of metal toxicity include mercury and aluminum from vaccinations, processed foods, and mercury dental fillings. So avoiding vaccinations is an essential step to take to preserve health. Vaccinations are loaded with toxins, including heavy metals, mercury, and aluminum, which are injected directly into the bloodstream, limiting the body's ability to detoxify. Mercury and aluminum have been linked with brain damage and inflammation, Alzheimer's, and cancer. Mercury is considered a toxic substance that must be removed and handled carefully, and yet is injected into babies and vulnerable adults with compromised immune systems. Dentists continue to use mercury and other incompatible dental fillings, although the evidence is overwhelming against their safety. Mercury vapor from dental fillings continues to leach into your body, causing toxicity and damaging your health. The American Dental Association continues to claim mercury dental amalgams are safe and does no damage. I've invited them multiple times on this program to debate the issue. They have not been inclined to accept. So get rid of the metals, get rid of the mercury, eat healthy, and build up your immune system naturally. That is how you make a difference. I'm Gary Knoll. Now it's time for our talk back segment of our program, where you, the listener, have a chance to call in, share your points of view. We've been doing so many original investigative reports, challenges to the misinformation of orthodoxy. You can give us a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm on a telephone because I'm out on the road and doing the work that I got to do out here. By the way, here's something from Freda Burrell, Secretary of Same Vax. It's short, but I think it's relevant to what we're talking about. She says, quote, in 2011, Caitlin was vaccinated with the human papilloma vaccine, Cervarix. On October 5th, she got her third shot. 5 days later, Caitlin was in the bathroom and became very dizzy. She could barely stand on her feet. I called the doctor immediately and asked him if it could have something to do with the human papilloma vaccine she just had. The doctor said that was impossible. Esther, Caitlin's mother, tells her daughter's story, and like all other girls who became sick after the human papilloma vaccine, she got the same reaction from her doctors. Oh, that has nothing in the world to do with vaccines. Esther continues, quote, I've talked to the community health service. Everywhere you go, they tell you no, no, no for every single answer. Then I looked on the internet. It occurred to me that very many girls have the same symptoms of dizziness, nausea. She has extreme headaches, can't bear sounds and bright lights. Of course, doctors are not asking questions. Instead, they're asking, well, what's happening to her in her home environment? That's not the problem. It's the vaccines. By the way, you should know how bad the human papilloma vaccine is. Tens of thousands of young girls have been stricken. Over 130 have died. And yet, parents dutifully offer up their kids to the state, to this massive corrupt bureaucracy, our public health state bureaucracies, as if they know what they're doing. They don't. Let's say hello to Harry from New York City. Hi, Harry. Your turn.
It's such a pleasure to finally speak to you. I listen to you daily, and I find you to be an inspiration to very ill people. My question to you is it's not really concerning the vaccinations. I happen to have HIV, and from listening to you and others, I made a decision that I want to detoxify my system from the HIV medications, because before I started the HIV medications, I was okay. But they convinced me, because of the blood tests and all others, that I better get on this stuff because, you know, I'm going to die. I've been positive since 1985. And I'd like to know if you would agree with me wanting to detoxify this. And if so, what would I do? Who would I see? Because I'm thoroughly disgusted with this, the health care I've been getting.
All right. Well, it's a legitimate question you raised.
Thank you.
Do you have access to an internet?
Yes, through my next-door neighbor, yes.
Good. Okay, here is an article that was just posted today. All right, write this name down.
I'm ready.
The Importance of Integrative Medicine.
Importance of Integrative Medicine, okay.
In the treatment of HIV/AIDS.
HIV. Okay.
Now, here's what you're going to read.
Okay.
You're going to get the most comprehensive holistic protocol ever created in the world.
Oh, okay.
It's my protocol. It's what I've been using to help counsel thousands of people with HIV or AIDS-defining illnesses for decades.
I see.
And also there, you will have a chance to read the full article published in the Townsend Letter for Doctors 20 years ago on three different ways of helping a person with AIDS-defining illnesses metabolically, nutritionally, and biochemically, and three different approaches. It was, I believe, the longest article they ever allowed to be published in their journal, which was nine pages. That's a long article. So that protocol, those three protocols are there. It also will give you more than, I believe, 500 peer-reviewed mainstream orthodox scientific references to support that what I put into my protocols are based upon good science.
Yeah, I believe you. I do definitely believe
you. Plus, there are quotes from Tony Brown's journal, because when I held the press conference that took over a year and a half to plan, we had over 100 people who had AIDS-defining illnesses with their medical doctors present and their full medical records who came to New York City. We sent out 7,000 press releases three times to all the gay groups, the AIDS groups, the National Institutes of Health, the FDA, the CDC, U.S. Public Health Service, to every major newspaper, magazine, radio, and television program in the United States.
Wow.
7,000.
Wow.
We also have had an independent panel of medical doctors and PhDs who had 25,000 scientific abstracts with them on nutrition, herbs, and other ways of helping detoxify and rejuvenate a person who had HIV/AIDS or any other AIDS-defining illness, pneumocystis carinii pneumonia. Now, seven of the people in the room out of the 100 were people I had personally worked with for over 16 months, and all seven had reversed their condition completely, meaning they were no longer HIV positive, and it took a long time. And these people were receiving therapy, treatment from the medical staff using my protocol 6 days a week. 6 days a week. I was with them every single day, 8 hours for some, 4 hours for others, for 16 months. They were never charged a penny. I paid for this out of my own pocket.
Really?
They were there. Not one single member of the gay community, AIDS community, or the medical community, no one from the media showed up. It was an intentional boycott. Why? Why, when you had so many people coming with over 20 different types of protocols that had worked, why would they not want to hear this if you had the medical doctors, who were not holistic, but they were the people's attending doctors, you had all the people themselves, you had their medical records, why wouldn't you want to hear this information? And the answer was simple. Because all of the money was going for drugs, including AZT, and the drug companies were paying front groups. They had their paid spokespersons who never declared that they were making lots of money. They had infiltrated virtually every AIDS support group in the United States and were haranguing and harassing people, but time on your side, take the drug cocktails. And when someone would say, well, look, you know, my partner's taken the cocktails and after a year died.
Right.
Well, that had nothing to do, you know, with the drugs. Yes, it did. And the Concord study proved it was the drugs killing people with AIDS-defining illnesses, not the HIV virus.
I believe that.
So now I've written my 23rd article of how, plus a textbook of 750 pages, Professor Jim Feast, plus I produce 5 documentaries. All that is up there for you to read and review, and you can speak with Lou Ann Panessi, who can guide you through the protocols.
The address on the computer I just put in, Importance of Integrative Medicine?
No, that's the name of the article. You would just go to GaryNull.com or go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, either one, and you can download The Importance of Integrative Medicine, the Treatment of HIV/AIDS. That's my newest article just put up today.
Yeah, can I ask you another question, Gary?
Well, we're loaded with people.
Then
you asked for help, and I've given you a ton of references, information, protocols, people to help you. Let me give you Luann's phone number.
Okay, thank you.
All right. You can reach Luann at 631-31,
okay.
504-6198. All right?
Thank you so much, Gary. Really, I appreciate your honesty.
All the best to you.
Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Bye. Okay. Before we take another call, let me just tell you, we have a brand new special. Something I have never offered before, because it's in 2 years I haven't done a self-empowerment lecture video. I've done lectures, not a video documentary. This is brand new. We're just completing it today, and it's a good one. Empty your mind, fill your life. And in this, I have some of the finest minds, philosophers in the world, who add their input on these important issues. I'm doing a lecture before a live audience on why people are living with fear, anger, depression, insecurity, uncertainty. They don't know what to do with their life. They don't even know what they want anymore. They're kind of like in an apathetic void, going through each day, just ritualizing the day, but no real dynamic energy. So I was in a long drive across country filming, and I wrote notes throughout this 28-day period, came back to New York, and I did my lecture. Then we found the best minds in the world to, like, Professor Gungadin, Professor of Philosophy, and Professor Thurman at Columbia University, Uma Thurman's father, one of the greatest philosophers in America, and Dr. Shoshona, Professor Shoshona. These great, great people are in here, 7 of them, 7 of the greatest minds. So that is the new premium. What a premium. It's only $20 to people in this audience. Give a call. I'm going to give you the number right now. All right, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. We've used Valerie, our senior editor, has used special effects and B-roll, music, and famous quotes. It's just poetic. You'll love watching this. It's such an upbeat, positive, life-affirming way of looking at life. It's going to help a lot of people. So you don't want to miss this. This is one of the most important documentaries you're ever going to watch. Very positive, very powerful, very life-affirming. Helping you take the step you need in your life. 877-627-5065. It's called Empty Your Mind, Fill Your Life. But this time, fill it with what you should be filling it with, and empty it with what you don't want in your mind anymore. Even Professor Bruce Lipton is all throughout here to tell you about how we can get disconnected from those negative thoughts and yesterday's angers and disappointments. So this is an important one. Give a call, 877-627-5065. Now, let's say hello to Justin from New Jersey. Hi, Justin.
Yes, hi, Gary. Hello?
Yes. Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick point, and I have a question for you. I called you a few weeks back and really concerned about the chemtrails that I see in the sky.
Yes.
And I've been noticing this for the past year. And, you know, I'm contacting my state legislators, my legislators, obviously, in Washington. Haven't been able to get a response, and when I call...
I think you started to say something, and you cut out. Good for you for being interested in chemtrails and that you're aware that chemtrails are merely a part of the geoengineering, of which HARP, which we did a major program on HARP on our Progressive Commentary Hour and also on the Progressive Commentary Hour channel on our archives, we did a whole hour on geoengineering, including chemtrails. That was recently. So just get up to date on that. All right? Thanks for calling in. I'm sorry that you disconnected yourself there. Let's see if we can say hello to, who do we have here? David from New Rochelle. Hi, David.
Hello, Gary. I enjoy listening to your studies and so forth. For instance, the study that says that this disease, whatever, has decreased greatly before the vaccination was introduced and so forth. But that's no good for me if my spouse won't believe it. So what and she's very good at the computer. What we need, all of us probably, is pointers to the actual information, the graphs
okay.
and so forth, that show it going down.
Fair enough. Here's
and the date that it comes in.
All right. Good enough. What we've done, David,
yes, sir,
is we have collected the actual public health records, including their charts, for the last 200 years. So... if you go up on our website, you will see 25 or 26 articles in the last 2.5 years that our scholar in residence, Richard Gale, and myself have researched and written, including the charts that were provided by Bastrinic, who is an outstanding scholar. These are the actual statistics. And in every single case, you will see that with measles, 98.6% gone before the vaccine was introduced. Polio, similarly, there were no vaccines for scarlet fever. There were no vaccines for many of the common deaths that were considered epidemic, for the plague, for example. And smallpox was never made from the vaccine was never made from smallpox. There's lots of misinformation on that. Roman Bastrinic did the research. I did the research by going to England several times and getting all the background on this fellow named Jenner who bought his medical degree. But all the statistics are there. Then the actual science is there. The actual, we provide all the science to show, for example, that when they say that if you took a certain vaccine, you would be protected with herd immunity, we show from the actual science, the peer-reviewed literature science, that the people most likely to come down with the disease are the people who've been vaccinated. And we give example after example after example after example of what they have. Then we ask them, well, where can you prove that you're safe from by using a vaccine? And the only statistic they have is that it creates antibodies. Then we went after the literature, in the scientific literature, on antibodies from the immunologies departments and from the toxicology departments to show that the antibodies that vaccine created have never been shown to be protective. They merely create some antibodies. So
Gary,
as a
can
result,
you show us the links to these, please?
We have the actual articles.
Can
we
you
have
find the actual stuff so that we don't have to go searching for anything? Just put it on the front page. I can never find your articles. But
if you go right now to the Progressive Radio Network and you go to the articles on vaccines, you will find all that there. We put it all there so easy for you to get. You don't have to go searching anywhere else. The chart, it's all in one place for you. Okay? All the best. Thanks for calling. I'm Gary Noll. We're up to the end of our show. I want to thank you all for calling in and listening in and sharing your time. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Real quick, we'll say hello to Luann Panessi before we go over and say hello to Eutrice Lead. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I get a lot of emails from people that are very concerned about the fascistic state that we've devolved to. There's something here from Catherine from Washington, D.C. She listens to you on PFW for a long time. She says, keep up the good work. There are a lot of us who listen to you. There's an enormous disappointment and fear of bureaucracies. They're all being, you know, everyone's being monitored by the NSA, and we're being encouraged to inform on anyone who exhibits any behavior that seems out of the ordinary. Hence, no one is communicating via cell phones or computers anymore. I'm 2 years from retirement. You said in Washington, when you said Washington D.C. was a giant cesspool. She says, I would have disagreed with you 10 years ago, but today, it's an understatement. And for those of us who are wrapping up our careers, disgusted, who want to get back to a normal life, there are thousands of young aggressive kids trying to take our place. Lobbyists, she says, are everywhere, and they're looking for people who can stay behind in agencies and help them to secure favors, contracts, and bids, with the promise that when they leave government service, that there'll be a good job for them. It's everywhere, no exceptions. Last week you said something that stuck with me, that we either support plutocracy or democracy. I see that our government has grown far beyond the need to serve the people. You call them self-serving and parasitic. You are right. The public would be shocked to see how ineffectual and duplicitous almost all the agencies are in our government. We serve our own interests, not the public's. So long as there's a sweet-talking Obama or Clinton, no one will care. And she says, thank you for publishing The Hidden Hand.
That's nice. Good. I will go into depth on that. Revisit this question next week when I have plenty of time to address it on Sunday night. All right?
Great.
Thank you. Eutrice, what's on board today, Eutrice?
Well, we are observing the 20th anniversary of NAFTA, and it turns out Ross Perot was right. It's a giant sucking sound that robbed the U.S. of almost 683,000 jobs, our guest says. And then we'll update situations in Detroit where vultures are circling around the city's assets, and some of them have already closed bargain basement deals.
All right, two issues that are very important. We look forward to Eutrice Lead right now.